Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together we cover Notre Dame football recruiting and more for InsideIndySports.com on the Rivals Network. Notre Dame football is back into spring practice mode after Easter break, which means the Irish are back to hosting top recruits on campus, as well as Notre Dame keeps building its 2025 class to near completion. The Irish are also making progress on a solid foundation for the 2026 class. That includes finding a top-tier quarterback to build around. Two of those candidates are from Florida, Brady Hart of Coco High and Noah Grubbs of Lake Mary High. To discuss those quarterbacks and other recruits in the Southeast, we invited Rivals National Recruiting Analyst John Garcia Jr. onto the podcast. John, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
John, let's start with Brady Hart, since he just visited campus yesterday and you spoke to him following the visit. Where do you think the Irish stand with Brady?
I think they stand pretty darn high. There's no doubt that going into the trip, this was a huge opportunity for the entire ND staff. You know, I think going into it, I would have pegged Notre Dame, LSU, Florida, maybe Miami as the unofficial top group just from where I sit. And I think coming off of that trip, the amount of boxes that were checked, I think Notre Dame's got to be closer to the top of that list. Now, what is interesting with Brady is that he's more of an ascending breakout prospect compared to a Noah Grubbs, who's a two-year starter who has picked up offers for a longer period of time. And I say that to say it becomes more interesting relative to his recruitment. Do you pop and commit while you're hot, while you're on that ascent, or do you allow all the offers to come in and then you start to say, hey, let me start breaking things down? I think he's probably going to roll with the former compared to the latter. And I think that's why every visit he takes right now is pretty timely, because he's looking to take advantage of his ascent. So I think the fact that Notre Dame jumped in early, scheduled that trip early, was really advantageous for the Irish, and everything about the trip is what he loved. He said he spoke to the entire staff for the bulk of the visit. He got to take in a spring practice as well. Really loved sitting in with the QB coach and the entire offensive staff there as well. So he really kind of described it as a perfect fit. He said he loved everything. Like, he couldn't stop detailing how much and how well-rounded the trip was, how much he really enjoyed. So I think in terms of an unofficial visit and jumping in and making that first impression, I think the Irish did about as well as it could.
I heard he was impressed with the media that covers the team too, but I think that's unofficial. But you did mention checking a lot of boxes, and Notre Dame, until the last few years, hasn't checked a lot of those boxes for quarterbacks. They've scrambled in some, you know, they've gotten some pretty good prospects, but not in the volume that they seem to be getting interest from top prospects in the 2025 class, and now the 2026 and even the 2024. And I'm wondering, what are the boxes that Notre Dame's checking now that are getting these kind of prospects interested?
I think it's the combination of course, look, the brand is what it is. It's one of the most unique brands, I would say, in all of sports, much less college football recruiting. And that combination, branding, academics, high-level football, that triangle sells on its own. But I think what's different in the last year or two is maybe the sense of urgency there, whether you see the program working through the portal to grab great quarterbacks. And obviously this offseason, a huge coaching change, you know, and an urgency there. So then you start layering that amazing triangular approach with some of the more obvious to see elements, like, you know, hey, this new OC just coached a Heisman Trophy winner, and it was an exciting down the field passing offense that every single spread quarterback wants to participate in at the next level. And I think for Hart in particular, you know, he's a bit of a gunslinger, 41 TDs, 11 picks last year on a state title team. So that willingness to take chances down the field is going to appeal to him more than maybe a game manager type of quarterback. So I do think all of those things stack well right now with the profile of what Notre Dame is trying to sell. And look, the Irish, you guys know, they've always had to recruit nationally anyway, right? So there are pipelines and inroads that are built really throughout the country, and certainly the state of Florida is one of those.
John, let's talk about Noah Grubbs now too. He also visited this spring. He had been on campus before. He camped at Notre Dame last year. Where do you think Notre Dame stands with Noah Grubbs, and who's the main competition for with the Irish in Grubbs' recruitment?
Yeah, I'm going to probably repeat some of the things I said about Brady. And look, the two are close. They train together. They're both kind of in that Orlando metro area. And yeah, Grubbs went back for a reason. You know, he's on another spring tour as well, hitting a bunch of schools, and they all sort of have a purpose. As I mentioned earlier, he's been recruited for a longer period of time. I think he got the offer from Notre Dame during that camp that you mm-hmm. referenced last summer. So this is a kid who's had that on his mind for over a year at this point. So the return trip was really about the flow and what's different about Notre Dame. And for him, you know, I think he said every recruit should try to get there if they could, you know. And so it presents something unique, even for a kid who, you know, comes from a family who's not poor and is able to get out on 15, 20 visits in a very short period of time, to have anything stand out on its own about one school, I do think says a lot. And some of those same principles we said about what Brady liked about the trip, you know, carry over for Noah. It was just a little bit more familiar. So he's a little bit further along in the process. He is going to take a bunch of trips, as both of them are. I think as we speak, Hart is at Florida and Grubbs is getting ready to go to Alabama. Alabama has not offered Grubbs, so that could maybe be interesting. New coaching staff, obviously another one successful with passing the football based on what that crew did at Washington. But I think independent of Alabama, I think Florida is going to be a factor for both of these kids. Grubbs grew up a huge Gator fan. Florida has offered and has pushed for his pledge in 2026. Brady Hart's a double legacy to Florida. So I think that angle will be interesting relative to what they do on the field in 2024 for both of those kids relative to the Gators. But the interesting thing is that both could be committed by the time all that begins. I think each would like to come off the board this offseason because it's unique in that they know each other, but there's a couple other guys who train together that are also four-star type quarterbacks in this 2026 class. So they all know these dominoes are about to start falling. So I think Notre Dame is going to be one of the schools that dictates the pace in how the dominoes fall. I'm not sure. I'd love to peek into Marcus Freeman's office and say, hey, how do you guys have these quarterbacks ranked? Because we know how we have them ranked, but they're very close either way. I think both are top 50 and they're separated by two or three spots.
Yeah. The feedback I've heard is that whoever wants to commit can commit. I think Noah Grubbs in his interview said that Marcus Freeman told him it was number one. I don't know if Brady Hart got the same speech. I mean, sometimes that could be maybe misleading and trying to make the kid feel good. But I genuinely think that if one wanted to commit before the other, they would just take whoever did. I don't know that. And I think my understanding is they've been pretty open with them about how, hey, we feel good about where we're at with other guys too. And so, especially since those guys are so close, it makes it a bit of an interesting situation. The last recruiting cycle with Deuce Knight, well, I mean, it's still the current recruiting cycle, but the last quarterback race that Notre Dame was in, they really liked Deuce Knight, but then Deuce hadn't pulled the trigger on a commitment. And so then they started pursuing Bear Bachmeyer. And it seemed like as soon as Bear started to express that high interest in Notre Dame, Deuce is like, wait a minute, I want that spot. You're not taking it from me. So it'll be interesting to see if it sort of plays out in a similar way with these two, where I don't get the sense that maybe they're playing these two against each other, where maybe they were a little bit in the 2025 class with Deuce Knight and Bear Bachmeyer.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they're different. You know, they're close. They're both 6'4", both very thin. You know, they're both going to work into their bodies physically over the next couple of years, as you would expect, before they get to college. But I think their styles are quite different. Grubbs, kind of a classic, you know, 90s, early 2000s quarterback, going to stand there in the pocket, very tall, classic over-the-top three-quarter motion, and fire that thing with accuracy and consistency over his body of work. And then Brady Hart, like I said earlier, a little bit more of a gunslinger, maybe a little bit more athletic, maybe a little bit more modern in his build, but earlier in his technical development. So I think those two are going to be, you know, quite the contrast or compare and contrast types as they go forward. And they just happen to be pretty close as well. So yeah, I think they'll get that one figured out between the two of them, and it shouldn't be too long. Both of them, again, I think will come off the board before they start their junior season, which is, you know, another sign of not only how high of a priority each guy is for a lot of schools, but also the times. You know, these quarterbacks have to claim that spot because, you know, as you let time go on, a lot of things can change, a lot of variables can change, and you could lose that spot.
John, on a broader look, you had mentioned Alabama. And so beyond quarterback recruiting, I'm just wondering how that dynamic is working with Kalen DeBoer's there. I mean, accomplished guy at Fresno and Washington, but he's not Nick Saban. So I'm wondering how Alabama's recruiting is going in relationship to Notre Dame or other teams it competes against.
Yeah, it's, I think, the slow start, as you would have expected, you know, immediately after the transition. But I think this spring has been pretty positive for those guys. They've been able to, of course, host a bunch of recruits and try to, I think, play the best of both worlds is the best way to put it. So the culture, the work, the tradition, that standard, I think, is still present. And look, Nick is still fairly present there, but they're also modernizing. You know, there was a big uproar in the Alabama media market because there was music going on at practice. You know, so you talk about how traditional it might have been, that stuff is changing. So I think this is more of a modern approach, but they're obviously going to emphasize that tradition and those principles as much as they can. And I actually would assume they hit the ground running more with offensive recruits than maybe the defensive ones, because it's still Alabama. And then that track record that DeBoer does bring, that's been so obvious over the last couple of years. I think quarterbacks, receivers, I think those groupings, you would think, would have a better chance to buy into something earlier at Alabama, but they're recruiting relatively well, not Nick Saban level, but relatively well, you know, given what the expectations are.
John, Javon Boggs is teammates with Brady Hart at Coco High School, a class ahead of him, but someone that Notre Dame has recently started to target more aggressively, and who until recently had been committed to Ohio State. It's been interesting to sort of see the social media dynamic between Hart and Boggs lately. They've been tweeting a lot about Notre Dame. Do you think Notre Dame has a realistic chance with Javon Boggs?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a total – this recruitment has reset. I think when we see decommitments, oftentimes it is taking a step back but also maintaining everything that you've kind of dealt with. And then others, I think in Boggs's in this case – it's a total reset. Hey, I'm back on the market. Let me start over. You know, much like we talked about with Brady Hart, Javon Boggs committed to Ohio State during his ascent, during that breakout season this past year where they won the state title together. I think he had like 24 touchdown catches, something crazy like that. So he committed to Ohio State in the middle of that run. So never really took a bunch of trips, wasn't a priority for even the schools closer to home, Miami, Florida, Florida State, et cetera. So this was a total reset. And I think the timing of Notre Dame accelerating its efforts almost coincided. It was like right before he decommitted, they started upping the contact, and he really appreciated that, independent of Brady Hart. But now that Hart's been there and is sky high on the Irish, you know, we saw them tweeting and teasing about it just the other day. I do think Notre Dame becomes a huge player for Boggs. He already told us he wanted to get there as soon as he could. They were talking about an official visit to South Bend. I don't think it's materialized just yet, but he's one that is, again, resetting his recruitment. So the schools that were initially in it, I think he has moved on from altogether. So it will be the new grouping of Notre Dame. He was just at Georgia, Florida. USC is one that is working hard with him as well. So this will be a broad national recruiting battle. But look, he also wants to come off the board before the season. So real simple for Notre Dame. Get them on campus first, sort of re-galvanize and see where you're at after that point. But they'll absolutely be in it if they can do that.
John, I want to ask you about three of the Florida guys in the 2025 class, Justin Thurman, Ivan Taylor, and if I'm butchering this, correct me, Davion Dixon. Just your impressions of those guys if you've seen them.
Well, yeah, Dixon, we'll get a fresh look at this weekend, actually, at Rivals Camp. But I've seen him a couple times at different events, spring football game last year as well. Just kind of a classic interior run stuffer. He's a two-gapper who's not the tallest, maybe 6'2", but he carries his frame really well at around 300 pounds. quicker than fast, but extremely powerful with some of that leverage dominance. And I think we see Notre Dame courting that type of player over the last few cycles. I was a huge fan of Sean Civilano. I'm sure we had him ranked the highest compared to everyone else. but same type of style, right? You know, a leverage power type player. I think Sean's a little bit quicker than Dixon at this point, but Dixon's a little bit bigger and has a bigger frame than Sean. So I think that same type of, hey, you got to stop the run. You're going to play in the cold, almost a classic fit there for Notre Dame. And I think the staff's done a really nice job with him because there were a lot of Miami flip rumors, I would say, at the end of his junior season, and they've all but died. I haven't heard anything, you know, about it recently. And we know Dixon's been back up to South Bend, so I think he's pretty solid with the program. With Taylor, just a do-it-all defensive back, high pedigree, as you would imagine, given who his father is, can play corner, can play safety. I think safety is the safer bet relative to the projection because he's just that instinctive player. It's just in the right place at the right time. He does have the measurables and the athleticism to work elsewhere if he needs to, but just love where he is, you know, in between the ears, you know, and I think that will be, you know, where he starts off his career there in South Bend. I think he dealt with a bit of an injury, so we haven't seen him recently. So we'll definitely try to circle back towards his senior year, but we're sky high on Taylor for sure. And who was the third prospect? I missed
Justin Thurman.
Oh yeah, of course. Justin's fascinating. A kid who moved down from the Midwest to Tampa, and he's this blank canvas when he gets to Tampa Jesuit, which is a great school, private school, state championship type program in the Tampa area. And they didn't know what to do with him. You know, he could play linebacker, he could play safety, he could play corner, receiver, running back. And they ended up just saying, hey, we just got to get him the football in any capacity. And I think that speed is really his calling card. He's a modern player if he's going to stay at running back at the next level. You know, we'll slot him as an athlete. And then if we change it, it'll probably be all-purpose back because that's who he is. He's just a football player who has that great build and great speed to where you can almost still, I think, mold him into what you want him to be at the next level. So if he's a running back, I think he's a change of pace type, but he could also factor into the return game, kick coverage units, and probably work a little slot if you needed him to. I think he's that versatile and that comfortable out in space, but you can't teach a great frame with great speed. And he's a great kid too. Definitely a great fit for Notre Dame.
John, IMG Academy has been a little bit of a black hole for Notre Dame. They just haven't been able to have a lot of recruiting success as of late. They did have some success earlier on. I think the last signee from there was Houston Griffith in the 2018 class.
Yep.
There are a number of, and it's not for lack of trying. They offer guys there annually. I mean, everyone does because there's so much talent in that program. But there are some guys that seem to be showing more interest in Notre Dame in this 2025 and 2026 cycles. In the 2025 class, you got the linebackers, Gavin Nix and Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng. The 2026 class, you have the DBs, Zach Fort, Kasani Giles were up on campus. I think Elijah Golden was very high on Notre Dame when he received an offer recently. I think you've spent some time at IMG Academy recently. Do you get a sense that Notre Dame is resonating with some of the athletes there that maybe they haven't been in the last five or six recruiting cycles?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know it'd been that long. I would have guessed wrong on that. Because typically, look, hey, national powers do well at a high school national power at IMG, right? A lot of those kids end up at, you know, Bama, Georgia, Ohio State. I would have assumed Notre Dame in there as well. But yeah, it does seem like they've got a higher ceiling with some of these 2025 and 26 recruits. I think obviously, you know, Owusu-Boateng as a legacy. Kind of funny, the first time I went to see him at IMG, we started talking Notre Dame because I had just assumed you've obviously been there and you've obviously are familiar, all this stuff. And he's like, no, I've never been as a recruit. So I know accomplishing that first visit finally was a huge deal for both sides of that coin. That's going to be a battle, national battle. Obviously, I think he's our number one ranked inside linebacker or outside linebacker at Rivals for a reason, just a true modern day space three down type linebacker. So that will be you know, hey, do I go home to Notre Dame or do I stay where my new home is in sort of an SEC country? I think that's how that one will shake out. Kind of the opposite for Gavin Nix. Always thought he'd end up at Miami, Florida, or Florida State. He's an Orlando native, and never really talked a lot about out-of-state schools until recently. And as you mentioned, Notre Dame has thrown its hat in the ring there. And I think that one has some traction to the point where if he does leave the state, I do think the Irish make a lot of sense. Because the other side of it is like, hey, if you were always going to end up in state and you've been this IMG sort of captain for a couple of years, why aren't you committed already? I know he's also gone through some injuries and things like that, so that can slow the process. But a big physical, more of a classic inside backer compared to Owusu Boateng, who's more of the modern player. And then in 26, yeah, absolutely. I mean, unprompted, Elijah Golden told me Notre Dame's a dream school. That's the one I've been waiting on. And obviously that communication got up to South Bend because Pot of Gold Day rolls around and that offer was, you know, we basically had the story written before he got the offer. So that one, I think, has a lot of traction. Another mid-Atlantic, you know, kid who's down at IMG. A lot of those guys want to go back home, you know, go back to that area, Big Ten country, the Midwest in general. I think they want to go back and sort of represent, hey, yeah, I left, but I'm still going to come back. And I think, you know, Golden's one who ends up at a Notre Dame and Michigan and Ohio State when all is said and done. If I had to guess today, I would definitely, you know, future cast him to the Irish if he was closer to that point.
All right, John, before I let you go, I want to ask you about two different Georgia receivers. One's more of a wild card. It was an offer that Notre Dame extended in the 2026 class on that Pot of Gold Day, and that's Devin Carter, a very elite wide receiver who was once committed to Florida State. His dad played at Florida State. My understanding is he's a good student as well. So when you see an elite receiver out of Georgia, Georgia's playing so well, he has ties to Florida State, it's like, well, why should Notre Dame even waste its time there? But do you think that Devin Carter would be someone he's planning to visit Notre Dame that could be a realistic take for Notre Dame?
Yeah, I think a lot of it early was chalk with him. Hey, legacy, committed to FSU, just like dad. And we kind of thought that was going to be it from a recruiting standpoint. But once he backed off, kind of like with Boggs, you get the sense that this thing is going to be wide open all over again. And two things about, and I'll get some hate for this, but it's cool. Two things about receivers in Georgia that are great. The Georgia Bulldogs have not been great at that position. So right. If there's a position where you can go in there and quarterback's the other, if you can go in there and grab an elite prospect and have a better chance than you would on the D-line or the O-line or linebacker or running back, it's probably quarterback and wide receiver. So, you know, anytime there's an elite wide receiver in the state of Georgia, I feel like there's a little bit more possibility of him leaving the state. So I do think he's going to be a national kid. Look, he could push for the number one receiver in the class status. He could push Chris Henry Jr. Like, I think he's that special. 4.4 on the laser, as you mentioned, high academic, extremely long. Like, every time you see him, you like him more. So I think his recruitment can be truly national, which means it's going to go the distance. I think this is going to be a long-term recruitment for whoever is going to have an opportunity. So any trips now, I think, are pretty big for Carter, who's not as well-traveled as you would think for a legacy, you know, recruited since middle school type of kid. He is not as well-traveled as you would expect. So any trip now, I think, is pretty big for him, but he's going to approach it from a pretty wide open standpoint. So yeah, I do think Notre Dame or anyone else is going to have a chance, especially if they get him on campus sooner rather than later, because his stock, all of those things are all pointed up.
All right. And the other receiver is Jerome Bettis Jr., committed to Notre Dame. After we all believed he would eventually commit to Notre Dame, where is there room for Bettis Jr. to improve in his game? What do you want to see from him in his junior season to maybe consider moving him up in the rankings?
Yeah, I just think a lot of what we saw last year, we liked. We just want to see more of it. You know, if you're going to be the big boundary 50-50 ball wide receiver, go dominate in that lane, right? You know, look, obviously he's a 6'1", 6'2", type of kid who is who he is athletically. I'm not going to say, hey, well, yeah, the day he runs a 4.4 laser, I'll move him up the rankings. It's never that simple. But I think for me and with him, go take the next step just from a production and consistency standpoint. All the tools are there. He's big. He's physical. Great blocker. Great player. Another high academic football player. And we see the flashes. You know, I'm a red zone target. I can go over the top. I can play that back shoulder. Lean into that a little bit more. And then as for every recruit, just continue to emphasize the other elements of your game that maybe aren't as strong. Develop a little bit more as a route runner. Play on a lower plane as a bigger receiver, which is hard to do, right? Play on a lower plane to find some of the holes in the zone or to work the second or third levels a little bit better. So I do think we're going to have that opportunity. Woodward Academy is going to throw it a little bit more going forward. They lost some really good pieces in the backfield. So I do think he's going to have an opportunity to up that production. But he also, you know, he plays with a Florida Gator commitment and Josiah Abdullah on the other side at wide receiver. So, you know, those two bouncing off of each other, I think will be fun to track. But for Jerome, yeah, just lean into that and become that 50-50 player that you say, man, I thought the kid was 6'5", because he's that good with those contested grabs. And he's very good at that already. So I just think emphasizing that strength and then starting to round out the game a little bit elsewhere will help him. But extremely high floor player, going to be consistent, going to be reliable, going to be a third and sixth guy. And we all, every offense needs that at every level. So there's nothing wrong with who he is today either.
All right, John. Well, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us and getting us caught up with all these Florida and Georgia recruits. Notre Dame's doing plenty of recruiting down there. So I'm sure we'll be in touch soon, or rather than later, getting more information from you. But appreciate your time, and we'll obviously keep following your work.
And for our subscribers, read John's story today on Brady Hart. He had a really good recap of his visit.
Thank you.
Before we get to our question segment, I wanted to remind our listeners of our subscription promo for InsideIndySports.com. We're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to the site. That will get you access to all of our premium content, the Inside Lounge message board, and you don't have to wait for the next podcast to ask us a question. You can take advantage of this offer by using promo code NDPOD, that's NDPOD, when you sign up for a subscription on InsideIndySports.com. You can also find a link to the deal in the podcast description or show notes. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Inside Lounge message board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND and Eric's at EHansonND. First one we have is from LDL Go Irish on the Insider Lounge. Depth is important on any college football team, but so is high-level talent. For each position group, would you rank the depth and the talent of that depth for each position group for the current 2024 roster? Make it easy and say you need a 7 out of a 10 to win a national championship. Which groups make it and what groups fall short? And for each group, does there exist a high-level talented player that is capable of raising the level of that group's play higher than the ranking you gave them? For example, Kyle Hamilton went a long way in raising the overall score for safeties when he played at Notre Dame, in my opinion.
Okay, not too much calculus there because he tried to simplify it. I think probably the easiest way, Tyler, is for us to go position by position, back and forth, or do you want me to just...
That works, yeah, we can go by position by position.
Okay, so for me, I'm going to start with quarterbacks, and I will give that a make in both areas. I think there's a difference maker at the top of that depth chart, and I think there's depth to go with it. But I think we need to see the difference maker part of it play out a little bit more over the offseason. Right. I feel better about it. But that's the way I would go with the quarterback position. I feel optimistic about it.
Yeah, I tried to give it a number 1 through 10.
Oh, okay.
Which I don't think, as long as you say it's a make, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
So I gave it an 8, which obviously would be above a 7, or a 7 or above. And yeah, I think there's depth and talent there. The question is just how much Notre Dame can get out of Riley Leonard. Obviously his injury history, can he stay healthy? But you have to, like, especially the depth there, as long as everyone stays on board. I think quarterback should be able to put Notre Dame in a position to compete for a national championship.
With running backs, I put a make on both counts. I have them 7 or above on both the depth and the difference maker, because I think Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price both have that chance to be that kind of back this year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I had the running back position as an eight as well. Love and Price are those guys that I think can raise the level even higher than that if they maximize their abilities, and the fact that you could use them in tandem in ways I think is very intriguing. So Notre Dame's season to expectations won't be lowered based on the talent that they have at running back.
Tight ends, I said, if healthy, I would give the national championship grade or whatever to both there as well. The thing is, if they're healthy, you know, you have Mitchell Evans and Kevin Bauman coming back from pretty serious knee injuries. You have Eli Reardon, who they're kind of babying through spring practice. Cooper Flanagan impressed me last year. He was a lot more college ready than I was led to believe. But again, this is still an if, so let's maybe revisit this one in August.
Yeah, I still went with the eight for those guys. I think even if Notre Dame has issues with Mitchell Evans and or Eli Raritan in the season, I still think Cooper Flanagan's good. Like they've just done such a good job of keeping that tight end position stocked. Obviously, it would help to have Holden Stace still here and have another guy there, but you understand why someone like that wants to get out, because there's just so many other options in that tight end room. So I think Notre Dame's had an eight there as well. And it, certainly the injury questions remain, but those guys, Mitchell Evans, I mean, was one of the breakout players last season. And as long as he can be healthy again, I would imagine he's going to have a very, very good role in Notre Dame's offense moving forward.
So here's the tricky one, is the offensive line. When you look at star power, meaning recruiting stars and so forth, I mean, there's talent there and there's depth at all five positions. The thing is, how quality is that depth? How ready are those guys at the top of the depth chart to be difference makers, and how well will the chemistry be? So the development piece has to be proven to me. So right now I go no on both, until I see more development this offseason, which I think August is the time where we're really going to get a better feel for that development piece.
Yeah, I gave the offensive line a six, which would be just below that seven level that LDL sort of set for us in terms of winning a national championship. And I think they can transcend that, but there's just too many questions that I have going into the season that I can confidently say that they're going to be fine there, or that isn't something that couldn't potentially hold Notre Dame back. I was just having dinner with a buddy the other day who's a diehard Notre Dame fan, and he always like, okay, tell me the truth. Like, what should be the expectations this year? And I tell him exactly what I would tell everyone else. I don't, even though he might think that I'm maybe more honest with him than I would be with other people. It's the offensive line is one of the biggest question marks going into the season. I think there's talent there, but they have to prove it, and they have to gel and be a good unit together. So they're at a six. The two guys that I identified as like could make Notre Dame elevate and beyond and get to that national championship level would be Charles Jagusaw and Billy Shrouth. I think those are the two guys that have the chance to really elevate the offensive line to another level, and maybe erase some of the doubt that you have about them going into the season.
So we'll flip over to the defense, and I'll start with
We missed receivers too, didn't we?
Oh, wide receivers. Yeah, I had that written down. I just okay. Let me have a sip of coffee.
Here, I'll go with receivers first.
Oh, okay,
I had receivers as a six as well. To me, those are the two positions. It spoils a little bit when we get to the defense. I didn't have anyone below a seven on defense. The offensive line and the receivers are the two positions that they have the most to prove going into the season. I do like what I've seen so far. I think they have the ability, just like the offensive line, to get to that level this season. But there's so many new pieces there. Dealing with a new quarterback, you're expecting guys that played last season but maybe didn't play up to their potential to continue to improve. So there is promise of brighter days ahead this season for them, but I just can't get there yet. I feel like, I don't know. I think I thought the receivers would be better last year. I know that there was no way that I thought they'd be as bad as they were at times last year. And so I just I'm feeling a little bit reserved and not wanting to get ahead of myself as it comes to the receiver position. So that's why I put the position group at a six.
I put trending well on both fronts, but lots to prove. So right. I'm deferring my grade to August. I don't think they're there yet, but I think there's a lot of encouraging things.
Yeah, I mean, and the list of guys that could be the one that raises the level, I think, is sort of long, right? I think it could be a number of those guys: Chris Mitchell, Jaden Greathouse, Jaden Thomas, Bo Collins, Jaden Harrison, Jordan Faison. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if any of those guys became like really big time receivers for Notre Dame this season, but they got to go out and do it.
All right, now to the defense. Now we're ready for the defense, and I'll start with the easiest one here. I'll start with the interior defensive line, and I say hell yes on both counts. They have the difference makers, and they have the depth.
Yeah, I didn't split the defensive line up, which I probably should have when I was writing this down. But I gave the D line as a whole a 9, I think, and that's the highest grade I gave anyone. I think the defensive line has the best combination of depth and talent, heavy on the depth, particularly, I think. And if we're specifically talking about the interior, I think that's where they're the best at. I think their interior is slightly better than their ends, with Howard Cross and Riley Mills as the leaders there. And I think some young guys that are prepared to take on bigger roles when asked and make some more of make greater impacts in those positions as well.
For the ends, for me, I put depth, yes, different makers to be determined. And I'm very optimistic that I will eventually say yes to that. I think Jordan Botello has potential to take a big jump in his game. I like some of the younger Vipers and Boubacar Traore, for example. Mm-hmm. And then flipping to the other side, I think RJ Oben is really interesting. But I also think Josh Burnham and Bryce Young are really interesting players. And you're not even counting Aiden Gobira if he comes back, but I think he's going to have a hard time leaping over all those people. So I like the potential of that group. So I don't know what Tyler's going to give them as a number, since you have to separate that out, but I would put them on the verge of being in that 7 or better.
Yeah, I think if I took the ends as its own, I would probably go with a 7, because there are so many questions there, and there aren't, like, even though RJ Oben has done some good things at Duke, I he's being asked to play a new position, and play sort of expand his game a little bit more. Can he do that? I think there's reason to be confident in that. Jordan Botello needs to take another step. I thought he, especially in the context of Notre Dame's defensive line, had a disappointing season last year. And so if he can play to the level that he played in the Sun Bowl, that would be extremely good. And then, yeah, those backup options you talked about, I think there's really reason to be optimistic that those guys can really step up and continue to help as well.
For linebackers, I said depth, definitely yes. Different makers, I'm hedging yes. Obviously, Jack Kaiser. And the fact that Drake Bowen looks like he's going to end up being the starter, knowing how good Kingston Viliamu-Asa is, I've been impressed with Drake Bowen. And then Snead, I've been on his bandwagon forever, and I love Jaden Osbury too. Yeah. So I feel, and even guys like Preston Zinner and the two guys that aren't even here yet, I feel pretty good about. So I do like this linebacker group a lot.
Yeah, I went with the 7 just because there are so many guys that need to prove it. Besides Jack Kaiser, I don't think anyone else has come close to being what they'll be asked to be this season. And even Jack is going to be playing a different role. But I have a lot of confidence that he'll be able to handle that. But I do like those young guys. I like Drake Bowen. Kingston Viliamu-Asa is very impressive. Kingston's one of those guys, like, he could have a blank jersey on and you would know who he is when he's running around. Like, you don't need a number on his jersey. Like, you're like, okay, that's the 5-star linebacker. I know who he is. But it's not like he sticks out like a sore thumb either, because Notre Dame does have a lot of talented linebackers too. So I think there's a reason to be confident in the linebackers, although I think of the defensive units, I think they have maybe the most to prove going into this season.
At safety, they have the difference maker. They have a unanimous All-American, the
right.
first, and Xavier Watts, the first unanimous All-American at safety in Notre Dame history. What we're not sure about is the depth. I think that needs to play out. Adon Shuler and Luke Talich have looked really good. We know that Rod Heard II is going to be added in June. So that's another piece that looks pretty good. Certainly Ben Minnick and some of the freshmen could try to push for playing time. So I think eventually we're going to really like the safety depth. It's just we're projecting a lot right now, but man, they have the difference maker.
Yeah, I would agree. I think you have to feel pretty good about where Notre Dame is at safety, even though you don't necessarily know what that starter is going to look like next to Xavier Watts. But I really like Adon Shuler. I know plenty of people like Luke Talich, and it's not that I don't like Luke Talich, but I would give the nod to Shuler above him as of right now. And then Rod Heard is the sort of question mark, but someone who's played a lot of football. And so you think that that's someone that's going to be able to make that transition and do well. And even say he doesn't, I still think Notre Dame should be in a fine spot there at the safety position.
Cornerbacks, yes, if Morrison is healthy on both fronts, I think he'll be one of the best cornerbacks in the country, and I am expecting him to be healthy. And yes, with the depth, I mean, you know, when he's your number one, then it makes everybody else in that depth chart look that much better. You know, losing Clarence Lewis, I think it would have been, you know, certainly more preferable to keep him, but I do think that they have good depth at the cornerback position.
Yeah, I think cornerback's good. Morrison certainly is a difference maker. I'm very high on Christian Gray. I'm interested to see what Jaden Mickey does in an expanded role. I think there's a lot to like there about his game. I think he's better suited out on the outside than at nickelback, where he struggled a little bit as a young player, as a freshman. You'd feel a little bit better if Clarence Lewis was around just as sort of a glue guy and a guy that you could throw in if necessary. Jordan Clark has, I think, looked fairly good so far in what I've seen from him in the nickelback role. So I put the cornerbacks as an 8 as well. So I think if we look at this and review this in total, I think there's plenty of reason to believe that Notre Dame is in a position to compete for a national championship going into the season based on the talent and depth of talent on the roster. I only had 2 below that 7 level that LDL set for us, and that was wide receiver and offensive line. Which ones weren't clearly above that line on your list, Eric?
Yeah, wide receivers and offensive line for me as well. And yeah. I came up with a couple of other categories. Special teams, I said yes to.
Okay.
Given the kicker, the punter,
yep,
who the return people are, and the fact that Marty Biagi has more time before spring to work on coverage schemes. And then coordinators, I think that's a big one, because I think one of the things that kept Notre Dame out of the playoff hunt last year was inexperience at offensive coordinator. Now I think on both sides of the ball, they have elite guys, and I think that'll show up this year.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. All right, next question is from at Charles W. Wolf. Which spring injury are you most concerned about?
I would say Evans over Morrison because of the severity of coming back from an ACL. The fact that we're going to have a chance to talk to Mitchell Evans at the next media availability, I think, lends itself to that they feel pretty optimistic his recovery is going well. Otherwise, they wouldn't shuffle him in. I think Riley Leonard's a little bit in that mix too, just because there were 2 surgeries kind of close to each other in terms of timing. But I mean, he's back on the field in stationary positions. But, you know, you just wonder with a guy that depends on his running ability that much, you know, how it's going to hold up over time. But Evans would be the guy for me.
Yeah, I was specifically looking at the guys who got hurt this spring.
Oh, okay.
So I was just comparing Morrison and Leonard as the only two that I think, I mean, that came to mind to me. So I gave the nod in terms of most concerning to Leonard, just because he seems to be on this recurring injury cycle. Now there's reasons to believe it'll be fine, but the track record is building here, and it's just a little bit discouraging. That doesn't mean it can't be completely fine come the season and it's never a problem again, but I know shoulder injuries can be nagging, which is what Benjamin Morrison's dealing with, but it's sort of a new situation there, so I didn't want, so I gave the nod to Leonard as maybe one that I would be a little bit more concerned about. Next question is from Nathan Reynolds at Enforcers 2117. After seeing Leonard without crutches and just a boot on and still being able to practice a little, are you more optimistic about him being able to be ready week one against A&M?
You know, I never was really pessimistic about it, but I'll feel better about him seeing him move around and run plays. And again, that'll probably be August. I mean, we're not invited to the players only workouts in June and July. And then talking to him about it will give us more insight into his process. And I think he can answer some questions about, you know, what we're kind of concerned about from the outside looking in. So that's my take on it.
Yeah. To me, it's never really been a case of whether there's enough time for him to be healthy. I think the worry was just that, like, he's losing some valuable time to develop chemistry with the offense, with the receivers, by this injury this spring. So he's not fully able to take advantage of that. So seeing him out there throwing it around doesn't necessarily change my optimism level, because what he was doing on Wednesday is nothing near what he would need to be doing to be playing. It's encouraging that Notre Dame wasn't like over or like underestimating or like downplaying the severity of the injury. Like Marcus Freeman said, he could be back doing things before the end of spring. We're not totally ruling him out, but like, we all believe that he's not going to be put in any sort of contact situation between now and the end of the spring. It doesn't really make a lot of sense for Notre Dame to do that. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's plenty of time for him to be ready and develop that chemistry. He's just not getting to maximize all of it. The greater concern, I think, in my opinion, is just like I mentioned with the previous question, what is his long-term health look like? Is this something that keeps bothering him? Is there something going on that's not, it's just not going to allow him to be consistently healthy? All right, next question is from at MG Perez 0718. What does the NCAA allow the players to do over the summer? Is it just strength and conditioning? Are coaches involved at all? Is Lauren Lando allowed to supervise their strength and conditioning sessions?
So when the players come back after their little May break in kind of early to mid-June, there's some OTAs, off-season training activities, that the coaches can be involved with.
Mm-hmm.
And Notre Dame takes advantage of that rule. And then the players have some player-only practices during the summer, not in pads. The coaches can't be there for those. They can throw on their own. They can look at film. Lauren Lando and his staff, they're able to supervise the strength and conditioning activities. So, no, it's not just strength and conditioning. There are other football related things going on in the summer.
Yeah. And I, to dive into what the rule book states, you get a maximum of up to 8 hours per week, with not more than 2 hours per week spent on film review and not more than 2 hours per week spent on non-contact skill related instruction. You're not allowed to wear helmets or shoulder pads for that, but you can use a football, but you can't use any other equipment. So like, you can't use like a blocking sled or something like that, which the offensive line would do in a normal practice, but not in these summer activities that they're allowed to do.
Or the giant padded donuts.
No tackling donuts. No gauntlets for the running backs to run through and get hit with. So
go backwards through.
All right. Next question is from SJB75 on the Insider Lounge. Does Marcus Freeman have a realistic shot at landing 2026 quarterback Brady Hart?
Yes, John Garcia Jr. already answered that for us, so that was an easy one. I copied off of his paper.
Yeah. We don't have to do a lot of the work there. And for the record, I had been stating prior to Brady Hart visiting that there was a realistic chance, and we didn't necessarily get into it in that part of the interview with John, so I was just asking about those two. But I do think those are the two most likely to end up in Notre Dame's class. There are other quarterbacks that Notre Dame has hosted for visits and is interested in, but that seems to be where the momentum is headed for Notre Dame overall, not just with those two guys specifically, just to expand upon that. Next question is from at StevieZ55. Seems like there are more high-level quarterbacks showing interest in Notre Dame for the 2026 cycle than usual. Do you agree? If so, is that attributable to Mike Denbrock or something else?
Well, Steve, I had peeked at your question before. That's one of the reasons I asked John Garcia for his kind of outside looking in perspective. For me, and to add to John's reasoning, I think Marcus Freeman is a big attraction to quarterbacks. Just his style, his aggressiveness with going after the quarterbacks, how he presents himself. I think the Gino Gadulli's track record with developing quarterbacks, I think, is a plus. Mike Denbrock's offense, which John Garcia mentioned in his answer, I think is a plus. And I think the talent already on the roster, having Riley Leonard here, Steve Angeli and Kenny Minchie developing well, and then having a guy like CJ Carr on the roster, I think that makes top quarterbacks say, well, you know, let's give Notre Dame a look.
Yeah, it's not coming out of nowhere. This has been a progression of things. I think from my point of view, like obviously CJ Carr and Deuce Knight are highly ranked recruits that have committed Notre Dame, but those weren't the only guys that were interested in Notre Dame in those cycles. In the 2024 class, Julian Sayin, who finished the class as the number 6 overall recruit and number 2 pro style quarterback in the country, according to Rivals. He was interested in Notre Dame. Cutter Bowley out of Kentucky had showed interest in Notre Dame. He is a top 250. He was 186 overall. The 2025 class before Deuce Knight committed, Bear Bachmeyer, he's 142 overall, number 9 pro style. Ryan Montgomery, 162 overall, 13 pro style. And Blake Hebert, 239 overall, 15 pro style. Those guys are all interested. Now there is if you're like nailing down, it's like, okay, those are guys who are like top 250. The difference right now is that there's a lot of top 100 guys, or there's more top 100 guys in this 2026 cycle. Specifically, when you talk about Brady Smigel, Brady Hart, Noah Grubbs,
Brady Quinn, just kidding.
Troy Huhn isn't as highly ranked as those others, but he's also interested in Notre Dame. So, It builds upon itself. It's not – this predates Mike Denbrock. I think he's certainly helping the cause and helping elevate that, but it's sort of a staff-wide effort that starts with Marcus Freeman, like Eric talked about. The recruiting staff is getting ahead of the game, identifying who those guys are that are the elite quarterbacks to make sure they have early offers and working ahead and developing those relationships early on so they're in positions to sort of take advantage of the spot they're in with their quarterback commitments. Next question is from NDBSC on the Insider Lounge. Damian Shanklin and Notre Dame seems to be cooling. What is happening with his recruitment? If so, what are the other what other possibilities does Notre Dame have?
I'm handing this off to Tyler.
All right. Well, there's one I'm going to hand off to you later in the show, so that's totally fine. So I guess my perspective on this is that I think there have been other people who recover recruiting, whether nationally or covering Notre Dame, that I think got overplayed where Notre Dame was with Damian Shanklin, and that made it seem like it was a done deal. I've never felt that way. Like specifically, we have the heat index on the Insider Lounge for our subscribers, where I sort of put everyone on a heat rating scale. And Damian Shanklin's been hot rather than extremely hot. Extremely hot is those guys that I have a future cast in that I think are eventually going to be in Notre Dame's class. Hot, there's still some ambiguity there, at least in my opinion. Part of that was because Ohio State was a dream school. He's gotten that offer. He's been setting up official visits elsewhere, Tennessee and Texas. So I never got the sense that like this is close to being done for Notre Dame and or Damian Shanklin. So that's the sort of perspective on it and why maybe people feel like it's cooling. But he's still set to visit Notre Dame for the Blue Gold game and make a visit, official visit in June. I don't think anything's necessarily cooling. I think this is sort of playing out how I expected it to. I feel like I'm talking about myself too much, so I don't really like that. But I would describe Damian Shanklin as he's highly interested, but not ready to commit and wants to look at other options. So whether or not you feel like that is cooling versus where you thought he was a couple months ago, we could certainly have that discussion. In terms of other options, he's really the only defensive end that Notre Dame's all in on right now. They're recruiting a couple guys that are listed as defensive ends on recruiting sites and profiles, but Notre Dame has sort of targeted them more as defensive tackles, whether it's Darren Kinnegbon out of New Jersey and Javion Campbell out of Kentucky. Maybe Notre Dame says, hey, those guys can actually play end anyways if Shanklin doesn't come aboard. But I think Notre Dame, if it doesn't get Shanklin, may look at expanding the board there. All right, next question is from Marie Biafore at Biafore underscore Marie. Overall, how do you feel recruiting in the 2025 class is going? Do you think it will be a stronger class in 2024? Specifically, what do you think of defensive line recruiting?
Well, overall, Notre Dame has the most commitments. They have the highest ranked class at this point, which is somewhat of a reflection of having the most commitments, but the star rating is good with that. I think that's a great place to be in early April. I think it's similar with 2024, with a chance to be better depending on the finish. As far as specifically defensive line, I mean, any class that has Christopher Burgess Jr. in it, I think it's a pretty big, good get for a defensive line. Mm-hmm. And I like some of the other guys in the class. I like Kulak. I like Dixon. Is it Reef or Reif?
Reif. No, Reef. Yeah, Reef, sorry.
Okay. And then, you know, I do think they need to finish with another defensive end. So I thought Al Washington has done a really good job of, you know, getting a really good start with Burgess kind of being the key recruit in that bunch.
Yeah. I think my perspective on, I think some people are like, well, is this class really elite? Like, is it going to stay number one? No, it's probably not staying one. I mean, actually, I can almost guarantee it's not staying one. It's just not going to happen. Notre Dame's not going to finish with the number one overall class. It does not get enough five-star recruits to do that. But I think it's a really good class. I think there's a chance it could be even stronger. It sort of depends on how Notre Dame closes the class. And it will depend on one thing that I think is influencing this perspective on how Notre Dame has done is they've taken some more three stars in this class. I think Rivals is a bit higher on some of the guys than maybe some of the other recruiting services are. So maybe they have more three stars in Notre Dame's class than Rivals does. But of the 19 commits currently in Notre Dame's class, Rivals ranks five of them as three-star commits. Your top 20 commits are what influence your team ranking come the end of the cycle on Rivals. And so Notre Dame's going to need either to get six more four-star recruits so none of the three stars count for the ranking, or you just get or some of those three-star recruits maybe get elevated to a four-star recruit level based on how they play as seniors. But like, just imagine the guys that are out there that Notre Dame has a realistic chance of potentially adding: Derek Meadows, Damian Shanklin, Madden Ferramo, Mark Zachary, Dallas Golden, Jadon Blair. Those are all four-star recruits. None of those guys are extremely unlikely to end up at Notre Dame. Will they get all of them? That might be a stretch, because that's sort of like pitching a shutout or pitching a no-hitter if you get everyone you want still left on your board. But
Or the White Sox winning a game.
Hey, now. Defensive line recruiting overall, I think, is solid but not elite. Christopher Burgess is a stud. Davion Dixon, who John was talking about earlier, is solid. Hulak and Reef are interesting guys to me. I think where they end up position-wise maybe impacts their ceiling. I think certainly adding Shanklin to the class will make you feel better about it. But if you throw in another one of those guys I was talking about earlier, Ikenigbon or Campbell, as a defensive tackle, that's a really deep class. Certainly you'd like to see more top 100 guys. Like, Notre Dame's defensive line recruiting isn't the same level as Notre Dame's linebacker recruiting necessarily. They're not getting as many of those top 100 guys, but I think the defensive line recruiting has been pretty good. Can it be better? Of course, but I think it's not necessarily something that's preventing Notre Dame from building good classes. All right, next question, and this is the one I will defer to you on, Eric, is from Bob underscore Oxnard on the Insider Lounge. Will all eligible players from the women's basketball team return for next season?
We're not sure yet. I'm actually waiting on a text. I don't anticipate anyone leaving but Jenna Brown, Becky Obinma, and Anna DeWolf. Those are the three with expired eligibility. But, I mean, realistically, there's going to be a ton of guards on the roster. When you think about Olivia Miles coming back next year, full go, and then Hannah Hidalgo being in that backcourt, and Sonia Citron, then you start to think, well, how deep can the guard rotation go if everybody's healthy? You got Emma Risch coming back. You have Cass Prosper. You have, I'm blanking on the young lady, the
KK Bransford.
And then, you know, when you look at the front court, I think there's a couple possibilities there. Maddie Westfeld, I think, will come back to Notre Dame. But she could say, you know what, I'm ready to go to the WNBA. I've started 120 games or whatever it is. I feel like I'm ready for the next level. She may say, you know what, I could be part of a national championship team like my sister. I'm coming back. That's more the scenario that I think's probable. And then Nat Marshall, I think, would have a decision in terms of with Kate Koval coming in and with Kylie Watson coming back, you know, is there a role for her in the front court? I think there is. I mean, she's not going to play 35 minutes like she did against Oregon State, but I think they need that depth, and I think she can still develop well and be a big contributor on this team because they do need front court players. So right now there's not somebody where I'd say, boy, it really makes sense for so-and-so to leave.
Yeah, and remind me, like, Kylie Watson, would she be ready for the beginning of the season? Is there a chance that maybe she wouldn't, coming back off of an ACL?
There is a chance she would not be ready at the beginning of the season. She
so that
may
could
be,
open up playing time early in the season for some of those people that might like a Nat Marshall, so that playing time is there early on, and then maybe later in the season they have to figure out how to work that out with Kylie Watson returning. All right, our last question is from Mr. Nev at Mr. Irish Red. You guys are the commissioners of the NCAA. How would you construct the transfer portal calendar? Is there a calendar for schools when they can make coaching changes as well?
Well, I think if you try to make a calendar for coaching changes and restrict that, given both the college cycle, the carousel, and the NFL carousel that affects college, you're going to spend a lot of money and a lot of time in court. So I'm not going to touch that one.
Yeah.
And honestly, with the transfer portal, I think they've tried to be mindful of what's best for the student athlete. And I realize it kind of creates a lot of opt-outs for bowl games and so forth, or potential opt-outs for bowl games. But kids should have the option to take visits in December if they want to be somewhere in January. Some of those schools start a little bit earlier in January than Notre Dame does in mid-January, and they want to make a good decision when they transfer. And so I don't know when you could really change that so that, you know, they've tried to make there be distinct windows. They're, you know, 30 days in the early one, 15 days in the later one. I'd probably just leave it alone, even though I want to complain about it too.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the bigger problem is that the season calendar more and more no longer aligns with anything close to the academic calendar, right? The postseason is going to be lasting longer and longer into January. And that becomes the biggest problem with the portal. Like, how do you figure that out? In a perfect world, I don't think the portal should open until the championship has been played. Like, why are you putting these teams that are competing for a championship at some sort of disadvantage to be open to recruiting these portal guys when others are already beginning the process? But so it's like a punishment for being a good program that you're still playing. And then because that program is going to have guys that want to transfer out too. And so I think everything should sort of wait till that happens. And even we're talking specifically about football because that's what we're most familiar with. But even like basketball, I think it opened in the middle of the tournament, right? So like How are it feels like it's a you're at a disadvantage if you're trying to advance in the college basketball tournament, and the transfer portal is open. If what happened, if as I suggested, so I would say like maybe there's a 30-day window that starts 1 week after the national championship game, but then that would be impossible. You wouldn't have mid-year transfers at that rate, because of the way the football championship's going to be lasting into January. You just wouldn't have those. Now, would that be the worst thing? No, but it certainly would especially impact a program like Notre Dame, who's leaning on graduate transfers and having those guys make their impact that one season they're at their new school. So I don't know that that would happen. So yeah, I mean it's a really hard situation to deal with. I don't know what the best solution is, other than in my personal opinion, I'd rather play some games before school starts. Like, is it the worst thing to play games in August? Yeah, maybe if you're a southern school and it's really hot, or if you're in Texas. But I'd rather see the whole season get shifted. So then your championship game should be in like the first week of January. I don't think that it should stretch farther into January. And that would allow for my portal idea to be more realistic. As for the coaching changes, yeah, you can't dictate coaching changing just timelines because the coaches want to go to a different level that's on a different calendar completely. And then what if a coach breaks the law or the school rules? Like you're not allowed to fire them because it's not the coaching window. Like I don't think you'd want to make them wait. So I don't think there's going to be any sort of change in terms of when coaching changes can happen. All right, that is it for today's episode of the Inside Indy Sports Podcast. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other popular podcast platforms. If you like what you hear, give us a star rating, leave a review, and share our podcast feed with someone who's still recovering from a busted NCAA tournament bracket. As I mentioned earlier, we're offering a 30-day free trial to our podcast listeners who want to try out a subscription to InsideIndySports.com. So please take advantage of that with the code NDPOD. That's NDPOD. We should be back on track now with a weekly podcast in addition to Football Never Sleeps over on YouTube on Monday night. So make sure you're keeping up with all of our audio and video offerings. Until then, stick with InsideIndySports.com for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.